This edition of Nation Talk is being brought to you by Scotiabank. Respecting your past, trusting your future. Think what we can achieve together. Hi, and welcome to another edition of Nation Talk. On the show today, we have Ken Coates. Mr. Coates is the McDonald Laurier Senior Fellow in Aboriginal and Northern Canadian Issues. He is the Canada Research Chair in Regional Innovation at the Johnson Shoyama Graduate School of Public Policy at the University of Saskatchewan. He has served at universities across Canada and at the University of Waikato, New Zealand, an institution known internationally for its work on Indigenous affairs. He has also worked as a consultant for Indigenous groups and governments in Canada, New Zealand, and Australia, as well as for the United Nations, companies, and think tanks. He is currently finalizing a book called Treaty Peoples, Finding Common Ground with Aboriginal Canadians. Welcome to Nation Talk.
Delighted to be here.
Now, could you just start out by telling us briefly, what is the McDonald Laurier Institute?
McDonald Laurier Institute is a national think tank based in Ottawa, nonpartisan, not affiliated with any ideology or any government agency or anything like that or any other organization. And essentially, it basically exists to provide policy advice to governments, to the public at large. We believe very strongly in Canada. I believe that Canada needs good, effective policies to be competitive and successful. Believe also that we have a deficiency of sort of innovative policies, so policies that are really designed to take us full steam into the 21st century. We sort of raise money externally. We don't get any money from governments at all. And we basically try to do the very best we can to make Canada a better place.
Now, where did you grow up?
I'm from the Yukon, actually. I was raised in Whitehorse. Graduated from high school there quite a long time ago, 1974. And then got my university education at British Columbia and then in Manitoba and back in British Columbia and had the great pleasure of working all across the country from New Brunswick all the way up, obviously, to the Yukon and down to New Zealand, as you mentioned. But I very much consider myself a Yukoner. I love Saskatchewan, love the other places I've lived, but the Yukon is in my blood and the experiences I had up there have basically continued to shape me very, very profoundly.
You know, my next question for you is, what compelled you to take such an interest in Aboriginal and Northern Canadian issues? Being from the Yukon, I would say, probably drives a lot of your answer.
It really does. You know, I grew up in a community, just to use a couple of examples, where 30% of my grade 8 class were Aboriginal folks, and 1% of my graduating class was Aboriginal. We went from, you know, a third of your class to basically nothing. And the experience of watching my friends in high school go through the traumas of sort of moving into a fairly hostile and unfriendly society at the time was really revealing. I love the North. I really believe that Canada has ignored most of the North for much of its history. Basically, we only want to go up there when there's some gold or diamonds to be discovered. And we don't think very carefully about the role of the North in our life. But the reality is I became interested in the field as I went through my university time because I discovered how little anybody else in the country paid attention to it. The North just isn't registering. You know, we're, as a nation, 90% of Canadians live within 150 kilometers of the Canada-U.S. border. The majority of Canadian population is south of the 49th parallel. We have only a tiny population in the northern parts of our provinces and even a tinier population in the territories. And among the circumpolar nations, Alaska, over even to Greenland, Iceland, Scandinavia, Russia, we do extremely poorly in terms of looking at the opportunities in the region and creating sort of a new future for ourselves. So we can do a lot better. And that's actually what's attracted me for a long time and sustained a lifelong interest in the North. I adore the place. I'm working a lot in northern Saskatchewan now and looking for positive signs and seeing a lot of them of a region and a population, particularly the Aboriginal population, that is actually turning to seize control of the 21st century. And it's about time.
You know, a very interesting take, because you have just recently finalized your latest report titled New Beginnings, How Canada's Natural Resource Wealth Could Reshape Relations with Aboriginal People. Can you give us a bit of a background on this?
Well, what happened was I'm working with my colleague and friend Brian Lee Crowley from the McDonald Laurier Institute. He's the managing director. And we started talking about sort of what was happening across Canada and came to the absolute complete conviction that this is a once-in-a-generation, probably a once-in-a-century opportunity for Canada to reset its relationships with Aboriginal folks in this country. And my heavens, we certainly need to do that. we are in the middle of an unprecedented resource boom. We know about the big players, the Voisey Bays, and we know about the uranium in Saskatchewan, and we know about the oil sands in northern Alberta. But in fact, there are literally hundreds of sites across the Canadian North that are being developed there in the middle of traditional territories, right close to indigenous communities. There are many following traditional lifeways. And we've gotten it wrong in the past. We haven't done resource development in a way that actually proved beneficial to Aboriginal people and actually supported their communities. So we have a chance with a great national reset. We can redo the process where the whole economy and sector is shaped by new Supreme Court decisions, particularly duty to consult and accommodate Aboriginal land claims, treaty rights, treaty land entitlement, a whole series of political processes and constitutional legal processes that have empowered Aboriginal people like never before. So if, as a country, we get this right, if we can actually figure out how to work with Aboriginal people and develop the kind of opportunities that are there for everybody, we can make Canada a better place, but we can do a huge amount to actually support the aspirations of Aboriginal people and watch them emerge as major players. So that's what we got started to do, because we could see that this was a matter of great national interest and importance. But quite frankly, we discovered very quickly, and I knew this a lot from my work in the North, that in fact the First Nations people, the Métis folks, the Inuit, are already there. There are some major developments already occurring. The pattern has changed. The corner has been turned. Use whatever analogy you want. They're actually seeing a major shift. And I personally see it as one of the most positive developments in modern Canada, and is one that's absolutely essential for national success.
Now, are you familiar with Bill Gallagher's recent book, Resource Rulers?
You bet. What Bill has done is argued that for over the last 25 years, Aboriginal people have won an unprecedented string of victories on the natural resource sector, that they've managed to go to court time and time again, not to fulfill their aspirations, but actually to hold the government and mining companies and resource companies to account. And they've been very successful. The courts have made it really clear that Aboriginal people have a significant role to play. They do not have an absolute veto. That part is also clear. But they must be accommodated. There must be a consultation process. And in fact, the companies have realized this perhaps even sooner than the courts, that there has to be a new approach. So what Bill does in Resource Rulers is try to alert the country as a whole to the fact that we better get our act together, because this is not a temporary thing. It's not a sort of a short-term political arrangement, that Aboriginal folks are here, that their authority, their power, their political sort of stature, their legal rights have been identified and reinforced time and time and time again. And so in one sense, it's time to stop fighting it. Basically, what we have to do as a country is find ways to work with Aboriginal communities and work with Aboriginal development corporations, find mutually agreeable pattern paths forward, make sure that resource development works to the benefit of local communities and local Aboriginal employees, and quite frankly, strengthen the country in the process. Done properly, this is a good news story.
Now, you talk about policy and government. Where do you see the Indian Act in this conversation?
Well, really great question, and it's a really complicated answer. Number one, many parts of the country no longer are under the Indian Act. When you get a modern land claim deal, as you have in the Yukon Northwest Territories and Nisga in northeast and northwestern British Columbia, the communities come out of the Indian Act. And we now have living experiments, living examples of what happens when Aboriginal folks are no longer sort of governed by the Indian Act as a primary force in their lives. And if you look at, say, the Yukon, where I'm from, I would simply ask you how many scandals and crises you heard relating to the sort of stepping aside from the Indian Act. The answer is none. The communities have adjusted extremely well. The whole territory has adjusted well. The level of collaboration with Aboriginal and non-Aboriginal people is unprecedented, both in the Yukon but also across Canada. So, you know, we have a model now of what that world might look like. I'm personally of the view that we need to make sure that as we sort of go forward, we do what we've done in the modern treaties, and that is allow the changes to take place at a time when individual First Nations and communities are comfortable and ready for the transition. So some communities will stay with the Indian Act longer. Others will find ways of sort of moving aside from it and finding a new approach. So I think we're past the whole process in Canada of sort of a one-size-fits-all policy environment where we create one thing like residential schools and impose them across the country, or the reserve system, or even self-government. That each process is one that has to be set by the agenda and abilities of the community and the First Nations involved. So the Indian Act, quite frankly, is on its way out. It's going to be transformed in steps from coast to coast to coast. And we're going to have a new reality emerging. And I'm of the view that success sort of breeds success, that whether you look at the Osoyoos First Nation as an economic model, look at Nunavut's new approach to resource development as a transformative sort of a model for economic development generally, or look at places where modern treaties are replacing the Indian Act as the defining element in Aboriginal life, we're basically providing models that other First Nations can look at and adapt. And the more successful models we have and the more we know about them and talk about them, then the better we are off to give sort of individual First Nations and First Nations communities sort of ammunition, options that they can sort of choose from as they chart their own future.
These are optimistic words, and it segues, I'd say rather nicely, to the third annual Aboriginal Entrepreneurs Conference and Trade Show taking place at the Hilton Lac Limi in Gatineau, Quebec, November 4th through 6th, is being co-presented by the Canadian Council for Aboriginal Business and Aboriginal Affairs and Northern Development Canada. This is all about accelerating change through business partnerships. And if anybody out there needs any more information, they can contact www.aects2013.com. I want to say thank you so much to you, Ken, to Mr. Ken Coates, the MacDonald Laurier Senior Fellow in Aboriginal and Northern Canadian Issues. Thank you so much for taking the time to be with us here today on Nation Talk.
This edition of Nation Talk has been brought to you by Scotiabank. Respecting your past, trusting your future. Think what we can achieve together.